Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
You always hear about background checks after every one of these tragedies, but I don't think most Arizonans understand how poorly populated the background checks are. Our computerized criminal history database in Arizona is only 63.6% complete, and it's due in large part to an out-of-date system.
He's proposing some small changes in, tightening up the data, which is very important, but if you're going to tighten up the data and have a more robust data collection and then not implement the system, it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
In too many school shootings, children who are suffering were able to get their hands on their parents' weapons much too easily because there's just not enough education on how responsible gun owners can keep their weapons away from children. Our plan here, it looks very similar to the governor's plan, except it actually has teeth.
We are ecstatic that the Supreme Court upheld the lower court's ruling. We knew from day one that we played by all the rules and did everything right.
And joining us to talk about extending Proposition 301 funding for public schools, Governor Ducey's school safety plan, and more are Marcus Dellartino, partner at First Strategic, and former Tempe Mayor Neil Giuliano, who is the president and CEO of Greater Phoenix Leadership. Guys, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
You.
Neil, let's start with your perspective on Prop 301 extension. Governor Ducey says he's going to sign it, and a lot of this came together pretty quickly. People agreed that it needed to be done, but the governor seemed to have wanted to wait for 2 years. How significant is it that it's passing now?
It's very significant. The conversation about when to address the existing revenue stream of Prop 301 money has been ruminating for a while and taking on different forms with different constituencies, quite appropriately, of course. I think we got to the point where it was important to do something now. We were hearing from school superintendents and leaders of school organizations that de-risking this situation of this large pool of money that is facing this, what people have called the fiscal cliff, a little dramatic, but true, was important to do. And so with Kate Brophy McGee and Doug Coleman in the legislature, they led their colleagues on the Republican side. The Democrats came along, and you saw a really strong bipartisan effort and success in signifying that this 301 money is not going to go away. It is going to continue for another 20 years.
Now, Marcus, did the governor send a signal to lawmakers, okay, I'm ready for this, so move ahead, I will sign it?
Yeah, I think he did, but I think part of it's also the natural progression of the legislature, right? So we start out sort of getting rid of, these smaller bills that, yes, they're important and you need them to change state statute, but they're not make or break sort of bills. And then you get to this point where we're going to start having a budget discussion. And I think that he said, okay, I'm ready for that bill now. We've got sort of the small business out of the way. Let's focus on the big issues of the day. And this is certainly a big issue, and let's move it along.
Marcus, some education advocates we heard from Dana Namark last hour are concerned that since this was approved by the legislature, not voters, it leaves more room for the legislature in future years to tinker with it in some way, to either change the rate or to divvy up how the money goes. How concerned do you think those folks should be?
It's a catch-22. And I am a bigger fan of letting the legislature sort of be able to make adjustments as needed, meaning if the funding were located in just – let's just say there's an overabundance of funding for textbooks and an under funding for school – for teacher raises, that you could move that money around more easily at the legislative level than going back to the voters repeatedly. And so I understand their concern, and it certainly is a valid concern. But at the same time, let's optimistically look at the ability to solve problems more quickly by having this done at the legislature.
Agree. I think that was the right approach. And there were people who were concerned about lacking the voter protection issue. But look, this is not the end of the education funding story. And when we talk about what happened with 1-2-3, very important, and then what's going to be the 4-5-6, I think everything that is going on right now and has gone on since the passage of 1-2-3 is all number four. Right? These are all the things that need to come together, sort of the, get your things in line. We now have to begin the conversation about what will the 5 be, what will the 6 be, and how do we come together as a community and all the stakeholders come together to make sure that we work on that, because this is, we're far from complete, but this was a very important step.
And it's also important to note that that these going to the ballot is not a layup shot, and especially on education issues.
That's right.
And take it from a guy who's done a few of these. You know, you're going to have a certain segment of the population that says there is absolutely no way you're going to get me to sign on to a tax increase, whatever it is. And you have a certain part of the population that's going to say it's not enough and I am not going to vote for it. And so you know, there is a danger about going to the ballot that people often forget about.
In some ways, do either of you see the vote yesterday as sort of trying to release like a pressure valve a little bit? You had the teachers from the West Valley showing up at the Capitol earlier in the week with a sick out. There's a rally plan for next week. There was just a lot of talk about education funding and teachers needing raises, talks of potential strikes in Arizona. Was this a way to sort of say, look, okay, we're going to do something right now. Maybe we'll do a little bit more later, but we have to do something right at this moment.
I do think there's some validity to that statement. There's no doubt about it. And remember, the other part of this component is going to take part in the budget process, which takes a little bit longer.
So,
I think that this was a perfect opportunity, look, to tell the voters we're going to do something. We just did this component. Give us a little bit of time to work on the budget. And frankly, as far as education funding goes in the budget, I think that part is probably put to bed. There's other components in the budget that I think are going to be a little bit more rancorous, but you need to get them all done to get the budget passed.
Well, it's always interesting when, and Marcus knows, having observed this for a long time, it's always interesting when the policy component aligns with and catches up to the politics, right? And so I think what you had over the last month and certainly within the last 2 weeks, those two coming together, the need for a policy adjustment and the politics all were aligning. And quite frankly, that's how it works. And so you get a good result.
And Neil, Mark mentioned the sick out earlier this week and the Glendale teachers. Red for Ed, we're going to make this big thing. We're not going to show up at the school. Now that sends various messages. We saw the West Virginia strike. What is a tactic that would make sense to you that would also not offend parents and not make parents feel like, well, wait a second, you still have a job to do?
Mm-hmm. I think expressing a desire to have a conversation rather than a one-way shouting fest is a better way to go. And look, there's always I always encourage people to speak their mind, march, do whatever you want to do. I think that's important to do. But at the end of the day, we need to sit down. We need to talk to each other. We need to come to a solution and find something that we can move together on into the future. So is it all part of the process and does it all add in? Absolutely. It's also very instructional for the people that are involved. That's helpful. At the end of the day, we've got to sit down and work on this.
Marcus, let's come back to that pressure valve analogy that Mark used, which is that another case where you have a situation where teachers come down, they are real faces, real people that the governor is seeing. How much of a difference does that make when this is not just, of course, we all know teachers, but when there's this real mass of people saying, you know, we don't really think we can do the job as effectively unless we get some more funds. And, you know, we're already seeing a teacher shortage in Arizona.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't think that the marching on the Capitol was the tipping point on this by any stretch of the imagination. I think the timing would make it look that way. But I think the decision was already made well ahead of time that this was certainly going to pass. I would like to point out some irony here that I think everybody should sort of get a giggle out of. And that is the Republic has been pushing hard, and I think in their editorials, to sort of do the reauth of 301. And this has been going on sort of for months. And then we're at this point now in the article are about whether it's a tax increase or not, which, by the way, clearly it is not a tax increase. It's reauthorizing an existing tax. But there is some irony here, right? You've made this big push for the governor to do something on education. He does something on education, and now you want to go out and attack him. It's ironic.
Any chance we can get Grover Norquist mentioned in the paper, I think it's good.
Right. Call him up.
Another really significant education bit of news that happened this week was that the state Supreme Court said that the measure, the referendum on the voucher expansion bill will be allowed to stay on the ballot, at least for now, depending on what the legislature does. And Marcus, you spent a lot of time at the Capitol. What's the scuttlebutt about whether there's going to be a repeal and replace, which is something that Speaker J.D. Mesnard talked about, or maybe they just let it go to the ballot and as he said, let's have the conversation?
It's relatively quiet right now, and that's because, frankly, 301 has sucked all the energy mm-hmm. out of the room, in addition to school safety, in addition to opiate abuse. We've tackled some pretty big issues this session. I mean, there's a lot going on down there. And I think that all of those issues have sort of sucked the conversation out of the room as it pertains to this. But I would... I'm expecting right now for it to go to the ballot, but remember, we've got a few more weeks left in legislative session, and I will not be shocked if there's a real repeal and replace.
Oh, I think it's a fascinating political calculation to be made on the part of legislative leadership and on both sides of the aisle on what to do in the next step with that. But certainly the majority's got to figure out whether that makes sense to do or not.
Well, and the conventional wisdom had always been that the governor, who is, of course, up for re-election this year, doesn't want to be on the ballot with a referendum on school vouchers, which is a bill that he signed into law. Is that was the conventional wisdom wrong, or maybe is it changing somewhat now?
The polling on this one is not particularly great, I will tell you that. So I think that there is some interest in sort of getting it off the ballot. The question it remains, though, is there the energy to do that? And when you look at the makeup of certainly the House and, mm-hmm. and a couple members of the Senate, I wonder if they can push a repeal and replace through. But the governor's shown he's got plenty of moxie. When he wants to mm-hmm. do something, he'll get it done. And I think that he's going to have to probably burn some capital on this if they want to do repeal and replace.
I think Marcus is right. Watch the Senate side on this one. That's where this one's going to happen or not.
That's Neil Giuliano. Also here is Marcus Dell'Artino with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. This is the Friday Newscap. More to come after this. Good Friday morning. It's the show on 91.5. We're in the midst of the Friday Newscap with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Joining us are Marcus Dell'Artino, partner at First Strategic, and former Tempe Mayor Neil Giuliano, who is the president and CEO of Greater Phoenix Leadership. Late last week and then early into this week, Neil, Governor Ducey's school safety proposal became official. Some people are encouraged, but as always, there are people who are critics on both sides. From a general standpoint, does the governor address enough of the issues in this?
Well, first, I would say kudos to the governor for being willing to address the issue and really leading a conversation with various stakeholders on this topic. That's leadership, and that's important on what is, I would say, the most challenging issue facing not just our region but this entire country with regard to gun violence and gun safety and however you want to phrase it. And, of course, how you phrase it determines which side you're on and all that other sort of stuff, which is irrelevant to the point that we do have a challenge. The data is very clear and compelling that we do have a challenge, and we need our leaders to step forward and lead a dialogue and lead a conversation to try to find solutions. I'm not so sure everything the governor is proposing is what will be embraced by either his Republican colleagues or the Democrats. That's yet to be determined, but I'm glad the conversation is happening.
Marcus, did the governor's priorities at least make sense, regardless of whether they were politically expedient or not? Could he have added something in there that might have gotten people to say, he's taking this even more seriously than we think he is?
Oh, I think you could always add something, but yeah,
it's a tough issue.
It's a tough issue, and I think we're going to find out about how tough it is in the coming weeks. I mean, when you boil this down, the Democratic caucus has made it clear that they want two things out of this. They want a ban on bump stocks, and they want background checks at gun shows. And that presents a problem on the right for some of those Republicans who additionally have a problem. Some of the more conservative members have a problem on the seizure of weapons that's associated with the stop order. And so this is a political minefield, to be perfectly honest with you. And I think that I think this will probably be, frankly, the governor's toughest issue to date. And he's going to have to bear down and sort of go to burn some serious political capital to get this one done.
And I'd also say, too, though, it doesn't have to be an end-all be-all with just what's being talked about right now. Just having this conversation and including everyone in this conversation is a really important thing. I don't know what the prospects are for anything to get passed. I haven't counted numbers or looked at any of that, but the conversation is really important.
On this particular topic, though, I mean, is it possible, do you think, to do something and then come back and do more later? And it seems like one of those issues that, you know, the Arizona legislature doesn't typically talk about gun safety, however you want to frame the issue. Is there a sense, do you think, that if we're going to do it, we have to do everything that we possibly could want to do while we have the opportunity?
I think you could, I look at every bill and every piece of legislation as something you're probably going to have to come back to at some point or another to tweak once you see the practical nature of the bill you've actually passed. And that happens in numerous cases. And very well, this may be one of those issues. And we may all agree that SROs have to be done and put in schools. And those are student resource officers or common parlance police officers that are stationed in schools. And you would think that most people would think that that's an easy or a layup shot to do, although there are some concerns in the lower income schools and the lower income echelons that that police and schools send the wrong message to some of these youths. And that's a whole nother debate that we can have. But, I think that that's certainly my vision would that would be an easy layup shot to get through the legislature. And then you can add on from there.
These issues in a broad sense, which is why it's important they're talked about, these reflect the culture. And I think it's clear to me that there is a culture shift underway on issues of guns in our country. Is it going to be a large one? Is it going to be something that happens over time? Very rarely do we have large cultural shifts, but a cultural shift is underway in the thinking of people in general. And this conversation is a reflection of that.
Neil, do you think that the rallies and protests that will be happening tomorrow across the country and here in Phoenix, do those move the needle at all on this issue, do you think?
Absolutely they do. Those are opportunities where people's hearts and minds are changed. And only when you change hearts and minds do you have an opportunity to change the culture. So they play a role. They're not the end of the conversation, but they certainly play a role in the broader shifting of public opinion, of course.
Well, I wonder about that, Mark. Let me follow up because I guess I'm fixated on this because I asked you the same thing about the teachers being at the Capitol. Do students at the Capitol, even if they are as articulate as a student we actually had on the show in the first hour today, does that make a difference? Or does some lawmaker say, that's cute, let me pat you on the head and go on?
I do think it makes a difference. And my guess is you probably – I didn't see your student speaker, but I'm guessing it's probably the same young man or one of the couple young men that have been down at the Capitol this week. They are very articulate. There's no doubt about it. But this has not shown up on the TV news stations, which I think is interesting. There is some coaching going on behind the scenes with these young men.
No more than a politician receives from their consultants.
Undoubtedly.
So it's not a bad thing, right? It's going to happen.
I just don't want anybody to be under the illusion
that
these young men are not being coached. And they're very driven. I think they're articulate. I think you might, in seeing two of them on one of the weekly TV shows, I think you might be looking at two gubernatorial candidates in about 20 years.
But we don't really want them to destroy their lives that way, do we, Mark?
I would tell them they have a brighter future, no doubt about it. It does move the needle a little bit. I think that from this standpoint, it keeps the conversation going. And I think that is probably the most vital part of any policy debate.
I spoke at the Barrett Honors College, one of their leaders honors classes a while back, and they said, well, what's a significant thing for us? And I said, you know what? If you, as a young adult or as any person, if you never find a passion to march and speak out for something that you believe in, I don't care what the issue is, far right, far left, whatever it is. If you never find that passion to want to speak out on something, you're missing something. So find that passion, march on it, talk about it, and you'll be more evolved, I think, as a person, and more involved as a member of our society.
And here's what I would – to play on Neil's comments, there is a fine line in between passion and frustration. And I would, and if I were coaching those kids today, I would tell you that stay on the passion side. Do not drift into frustration because that's when you start to lose your momentum.
Now, one thing we've all seen, I think, around the Valley are the self-driving cars being tested – and a tragic event that happened over the weekend where a pedestrian was killed by one of these autonomous cars that didn't react the way that designers expected it to. I want to ask the political question. Forgive me for this, but the governor has really put himself behind this in terms of when it comes to this sort of culture and having Arizona be a leader in this. Neil, getting past the tragic part of this, is this a setback for the governor's approach to the economy here?
Not at all. Oh, I don't think so at all. I think everyone understands that. Look at the major inventions of our time when cars were new, when planes were new, you know, all of those things. There are going to be setbacks. You have to expect setbacks. You have to be honest and forthright about what the challenges were. You try to fix them. But no, I don't think it's a at all a negative for taking a position that the governor has taken.
Yeah, it's certainly a tragedy. There's no doubt about it. And looking at that video, I can tell you, I could not have done any better as a driver. I mean, that
right.
pops out of the just pitch black. But I, you know, to Neil's point, I mean, technology comes at some cost here. And I think mathematically, when you look through 34,000 accidents in regular, normal cars that we all drive every day, there is a very good chance and validity to dropping those numbers down. This is a tragedy.
Neil, do you think that this accident in any way affects Arizona's place in terms of sort of a hub for the testing of these vehicles and that kind of thing?
No, I think those metrics don't change because of this tragedy. And we're still very, very prime location for the advancement in the industry.
And remember, there's still a lot more data. We're literally going through the analysis of the whole thing right now. So it's difficult to talk about without knowing all the facts and figures that are going to come out in the next sort of weeks and months that follow.
So basically what you're saying is that this we sort of reset, we still move on, Arizona can still be a leader in this.
Drive on.
Guys, in our last minute, just wanted to spring this on you. Did either of you do a March Madness bracket?
I was out like in the second round.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. So what's
got wiped out almost immediately.
Yeah. Immediately.
Yeah, it was a harsh reality. Yeah. I'm a donor to the pool, as we like to call it.
Me as well.
Will you continue to watch though, or have you given up? Are you moving on to the rest of your lives?
I don't have a life now. I don't want anybody to think that I have time to watch basketball right now. I'm watching Moana. Big fan.
My favorite.
Yeah. But other than that, I do not have time to watch basketball, to be perfectly
I'll wait for
honest.
The Final Four, the actual final, the legitimate
the very final.
The last
four.
Game.
When it's actually in April, not even March Madness.
Correct.
Right. Neil Giuliano is a former Tempe mayor, also president and CEO of Greater Phoenix Leadership. And Marcus Dellartino is a partner at First Strategic. Guys, thanks for joining us on the NewsCap.
Thanks for having us.
And the show continues. You've been listening to the Friday NewsCap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.